최고.
Welcome to Connectivity 181. I'm your host, Nicholas Bray, and today I'm joined by Becky Holder.
Hi.
And a somewhat returning champion, well, at least to NWR podcasts, Carl Castaneda.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. I mean, like, you shot me an email a few weeks ago. We sort of got chatting, so I was like, mm-hmm. Hey, why don't you just come on and see how it goes?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, It's safe to say that I've been out of the game for quite a while. I've actually never been on Connectivity. It's the only NWR podcast, or at least of the mainstays that I haven't been on at this point.
Mm. Oh, wow. Fancy.
Yeah. I haven't been on the Famicast either, but I feel like I have a pretty good excuse.
Yeah, you're not in Japan, so.
No.
I just wanted to sort of mention at the start of the show that the format for this one is going to be changed up a bit. We're going to do more of a straight run, like a more regular podcast, instead of having two separate segments and like editing them together later. So I'm just trying it out. You know, I'm still trying out different ideas for Connectivity. So if people like it this way, we may continue to keep, you know, trying it this way, just picking a topic and grabbing a few people and seeing where it goes. So first up, I just wanted to have a brief, what you've been up to sort of thing. So Becky, what have you been up to? What have you been playing? Anything interesting happening in your life?
Well, I'm catching up on some of my backlog as far as Nintendo is concerned. I've been playing some of the games I have for my 3DS that I haven't really touched in a while. But other than that, I'm a Final Fantasy XIV player, and Heaven's Ward came out last month, so I admittedly have been putting down my Nintendo for a while in favor of my PlayStation, so getting all hooked back into the MMO scene. This is the only one I've really ever played, and somehow it stuck.
I've never played MMOs. I've considered it a few times, but just haven't really tried to jump in.
It's expensive.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, I just know that it'll get its claws in deep, and I just don't want to take that risk.
Yeah, it tends to eat your life.
Mm-hmm. I remember losing something like 4 weeks of my time once playing Diablo 2, which isn't even really an MMO, but it was at least online. And so I remember when WoW came out, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to step away. Not going to do it. And since then, I sort of held to that attitude.
Yeah, I was fortunately too broke for a long time to play anything paid, and just mm-hmm. didn't have like the CPU to actually be able to run anything else. So I was like, all right. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't get hooked into it, and then, you know, I got to be an adult and finally had money and was like, I'm going to try this out. It was a mistake.
I mean, it's easy too with Final Fantasy XIV because it's like constantly on sale.
Yes.
Like they're always like, you know, there's always a new expansion coming out, or like they're talking about like, oh, there's this thing's been tweaked, and so it's like always constantly like at the top of like what's going on now when I like sign into PSN.
Yeah.
And it's a few times I've been close, especially when it's like free and we'll throw in an expansion for free and we'll give you money. Just please play the game.
We'll throw all and of these items at you. Just sign up.
I've held fast, but I mean, my strength is weakening.
When that Pokemon MMO gets announced, you'll be all in on that one.
Oh yeah, right. For sure. Yeah, that'll be the thing that breaks me.
Right,
yeah,
me you can't too. Resist Pokemon. Anybody that's played Pokemon, I mean, that's the reason they still sell them, is because we're all suckers mm-hmm. and we'll play them over mm-hmm. and over again.
Okay, well, let's move on to you, Carl. What have you been up to lately? Well, podcasting and whatever.
Sure. I mean, so I just got back from a trip to Montreal. So I haven't been playing games in the last week or so. Before that, I was playing actually a lot of The Order 1886 because it was like a flash sale at Best Buy where it was in fact like $19, which, you know, wasn't that sweet $18.86 price point that I've been holding fast for, but close enough. So I went ahead and picked it up, and you know what, it's totally good. It's a totally solid game that I think got shit on because it's just not great. It's like, the way that I've kind of described it is like if you took Time Crisis off the rails, it would be The Order. It's basically shoot, get undercover, shoot again, clear the room. All of the enemies are identical. Like, it's basically just adapting to the new pattern once you clear a room. It's exactly the same as Time Crisis, but just not on rails.
I think that should be a game, Time Crisis off the rails.
That should totally be a Time Crisis game, right?
And then everybody would be like, totally this feels like game. The Order.
Yeah. Feels like The Order, quote. You just put that on the box. I think that's a great box quote. But no, it's a pretty decent game. I mean, and it looks gorgeous, obviously. I mean, everyone already knows that. But
yeah.
And then as far as movies go, on the plane back from Montreal, my girlfriend's been trying to get me to watch Pitch Perfect 2.
Oh, jeez.
Because it's one of those movies that it's like, I mean, you know, before it came out, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine. It's clearly not aimed at me. That's totally fine. Not everything has to be aimed at my demographic. Yeah. My girlfriend saw it and said it was great. So she's like, you got to watch this. I finally broke down and said, all right, I'll watch it. And you know what? It's pretty good.
Admittedly, I actually really like it.
it's a totally entertaining movie. And you know what? It's one of those things where I really, you know, I didn't want to like it. I didn't want to walk out of it saying, you know what, that was a pretty good movie, but it actually is pretty decent. So,
I mean, I've seen some of the first one, but I haven't actually watched it all the way through.
So, yeah, I actually watched both because she was like, well, you got to watch the first one, otherwise the second one won't make sense. It's the second one is actually much better. For those of you who were pulled into the first one, I'd say the second one's worth checking out.
Good to know.
Okay, cool.
Carl recommends Pitch Perfect 2.
Exactly. Again, put that on the DVD or the Blu-ray box.
There you go.
It'll move some units.
Just need a Carl recommends sticker right there.
Exactly. Yeah, just my face with a thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Crosstalk.com recommends Pitch Perfect 2.
Oh, that's what I need.
So as for me, I've been not doing a whole ton of game playing. I delved back into the Banjo-Kazooie games for a bit the last couple of weeks. So I finished my save file on Banjo 1 and started Tui for the first time because I never played it back when it came out. I'm still early in that game, but I'm up to the third world, Witchy World. It's like an amusement park. It's pretty cool. Mm. It's
I haven't played it since the N64 days, but yeah. I mean, I remember even then it was like too many items.
I just got off playing Donkey Kong 64.
Oh, okay. So,
so like, there is a whole bunch of stuff in Tui, but it's nice to see that the notes are not really an issue. They're all in bundles now, and collecting notes really isn't like a big deal. It's like only used for unlocking moves now. And I'm kind of liking the way some of the levels interconnect with other levels. Because I did play a tiny bit back when it came out, and I remember being sort of frustrated I couldn't collect everything in a world before moving on.
I like to
do everything and then move on. I couldn't really do that in Tui, and it bugged me at the time. But this time, I'm taking it a bit more casually and just going through the levels. And if I can't work out something easily, I'll be like, oh, yeah, man, I might need another move or something. So I'll just move on. And it's been fun.
I was the kid that didn't have that item for that one area in Zelda, and I sat there for 2 hours just being like, I can jump this! I can do it!
Yeah. You used to bash your head against a wall until you're like, yeah. Okay, it's
and then impossible. Somebody would be like, oh yeah, you were supposed to use this. And I'd be like, somehow I got across anyway. I don't think I was supposed to get across. Whoops!
And I've got the other thing that happened to me recently, the other day, it's sort of a silly story, really, but it goes to show that Sonic is still popular with the kids today.
Oh, dear.
I had a Sonic t-shirt on and was down the street. I was just stopped to look at my phone, and then I just hear this kid from somewhere off to my right yelling, he's got a Sonic shirt! He's got a Sonic shirt! It's just yelling it really, increasingly louder, and just yelling. I didn't look up. I was so great.
Mm-hmm. See, little did you know, he was yelling like, "Burn him! He's got a Sonic yeah. shirt on."
Like, did you like play Sonic? Boom? Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, no.
I just thought that was funny.
Those poor deluded children.
mm-hmm.
Okay, so that'll do it for a little bit of introduction and whatever we've been up to. So I think we'll have a bit of a break and come back with a feature topic, which is going to be basically about what we would want to see from the new Zelda or Zelda in general. Basically, if we were making a Zelda game, what would we like to see? So
mm-hmm.
we'll have a short break and we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. We're still here and we're going to be talking about Zelda. So, for the future of Zelda, we all know the Wii U game is coming out, most likely December 2016.
Mm-hmm. That's what we hope.
We hope. It needs to, really, doesn't it? So, what are some ideas that we could see working within the context of the Wii U Zelda, or just some crazy Zelda ideas that we're just going to throw out there? So I might start with you, Carl. Where would you want to start with a Zelda game? What do you want to see?
Can I start with what I don't want to see?
Sure. Yeah, sure. All right. Anything you want.
I think it's always best to start off these discussions on the negative side and then work back. No, I mean, honestly, what we know about the new Zelda is obviously that it'll have a lot more open world concept to it. I mean, to some extent, which all the previous games have had, to some extent at least. Mm. And, I think what I don't want to see is for Nintendo to sort of try to adapt some sort of like Skyrim or Elder Scrolls-esque open world. Yeah. Because first off, I just don't think they can do it. And secondly, if they do decide to do something like that, they're going to have the constant sort of grind effect of like constantly having to do these small quests and small things that you have to
yeah.
do in between your sort of huge things, but there won't actually be a skill tree or leveling system to make it worth it.
Yeah, it'll just seem like you're randomly spending a lot of time. I mean, you already do that in Zelda games a lot with these little side quests that come up and items you have to gather, but it feels very natural because you actually have something to gain from it. But without the leveling right. system, a grinding system like Skyrim would just feel really out of place.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've said before, I think the last time I talked to this was when I was on RFN a while back, and my whole thing is I don't think Zelda is the Skyrim on Nintendo consoles. Pokemon is much more suited to that.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
It's much more suited to that sort of like small burst of play, but like always sort of grinding towards a central purpose. Zelda, for me, what I really want to see out of the next game is really just, and I mean, based on what we've seen so far, this doesn't seem very likely, a much more streamlined, probably shorter experience. You know, I mean, I can't speak for, you know, the broader Nintendo fan base. They all, first off, I don't think they know what they want, but like, I certainly don't know what they want either. But what I would personally want is like a 15 to 20 hour Zelda game. That's really what I want. And what I would really like for them to limit is the amount of junk and filler in between dungeons. Dungeons are the sweet spot. It's why everyone plays. Mm-hmm. And it's the one thing that, like, I keep coming back to. Even in a game like Skyward Sword, which I didn't really particularly like, I still really like the dungeons. There were still a lot of really cool, new, fresh ideas that got me into playing the game. It was just everything in between those that I didn't like at all.
I feel and like so they could... If, oh, I was going to say, I feel like they could definitely, like, streamline it sometimes, because there's times when you're just like, okay, I have to run from here, then I have to run over here, then I have to... And when you know that you're building to a dungeon, you're like, can I just go to the dungeon? And I feel like they could make it work with a shorter time frame, but they'd have to really, really make it... Do it right is the problem. Otherwise, it would feel just very incomplete and, like, Zelda the Abridged, as opposed to really feeling very fleshed out. I mean, they have games like Majora's Mask with only really four dungeons, but the game overall still feels very, very fleshed out, because there's a lot you have to do. I mean, it still feels like filler at times, but you actually have to get up to the dungeon. It's not just, okay, I'm doing this, and it actually has no relation to anything that I'm doing inside the dungeon. It gives you new powers and new skills to actually use as
well. You see, like... Going back to making it more streamlined, I think they could be successful with the open world sort of idea. It's something I do want them to see, because, you know, while a lot of people maybe prefer just having dungeons, like more focus on the dungeons, I do like having the big open world and sort of getting sort of lost in the world and exploring. Like, that's sort of maybe why Skyward Sword was a little bit off-putting to me, because it was so...
It felt really narrow.
It was very narrow, yeah. So, like, I'm sort of going to be mining my article. One of the first articles I wrote for NWR, the If I Was in Charge of Zelda feature article, because I think a lot of the ideas that I sort of outlined back then are basically still what I want them to do, and could be possible with the how they're approaching the overworld design. So... What I would probably do to make the overworld and side quests more interesting would be to take out your items out of the dungeons and give them to NPCs for side quests, or hide them in the overworld. So it would basically be like replacing the masks in Majora's Mask with your key items from Zelda games. And then you could have the world completely open from the start. And because I want to try and approach it from a non-linear perspective, right? So the way to make it non-linear would be to give you access or the possibility of getting a lot of the items straight off the bat. Now, in A Link Between Worlds, they tried this, but they made it so you just sort of got them from a guy in a shop.
Yeah, it felt very kind of just tacked on. And I was actually going to say that. I was like, yeah, I could see it working, like the overworld working, if they kind of sort of went with that concept still, and sort of that you can actually approach the world whichever order you want, so long as you actually get what you need in order to get there. But I would like them to see them incorporate something like that a little bit better, because Ravio I didn't even really pay attention to him until the very end of the game, and then I was like, oh, you're actually important. You don't just stay in my house all the time. Okay.
See, I mean, they could have done that in A Link Between Worlds. They could have, like, put some of the items in the overworld through other side quests, but they basically just put them all in one spot and locked some of them away until, you know, later in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very likely that they'll adopt, you know, a lot of the things that worked well in A Link Between Worlds into the Wii U title. I mean, especially since, you know, I think Aonuma at some point had talked about, like, you'll be able to, you see that mountaintop, you'll be able to just go in there and there'll be nothing stopping you, which kind of hints at the fact that you'll probably be able to do these items out of order, a la A Link Between Worlds. I think it really could just come down to a refinement of what worked well there, and just sort of trying to make the sort of item, acquiring those items less incidental and tying more into the actual sort of main thrust and main quest of the game. And honestly, one of the things, it sort of seems like Nintendo can make a very streamlined Zelda experience on handhelds. And so It's really just a matter of, like, can they just bring those, home console production values to that same idea? That same sort of, because you can play A Link Between Worlds for, a couple hours or maybe even just an hour and make serious headway.
Yeah.
And that's really what I wanted of Zelda.
One of the things I guess I don't want to see again in a Zelda game is really overcomplicated water levels. I mean, put that out there right off the bat, because nobody wants another water temple. Nobody wants another lake bed temple from Twilight Princess. Stop making us screw with water levels and stuff like that, please.
I would like to see... this was hinted at in a trailer in Twilight Princess, but it turned out to be a mini game. I wouldn't mind getting a canoe or something and just be able to run around the world in a canoe and through the rivers and things. There could be a dungeon element, maybe the raft. Bring the raft back from Zelda 1.
One of the things that they always sort of do in Zelda games, maybe not so much in Skyward Sword, is, initially getting anywhere in the game takes forever, and then eventually you basically have a fast, a fast movement option. Especially if they're really going to be highlighting the open world aspect of the new game,
it would
be
great if you incorporate
you'd
something.
Be able to sort of it'd be great if you could just be able to forge new paths so that it didn't feel just like you were basically just instantly, getting yourself to one area from the other, but also not literally riding on a horse for 30 minutes trying to get to the next dungeon. It would be great if maybe you could find an underground path or some sort of other ways to interact with the environment that didn't just feel incidental.
As much as I loved Wind Waker, that was one of the things that got me about playing that game for a long time, was sailing so far across the map before I actually got the capability to teleport to some places. It was just like, oh my god, I'd set it and just let it go and do something else on the side while I was just watching myself sail. I was like, oh.
Sure, part of that was, the fact that just the limits of the technology having to load in those new areas. But, partly it was just bad pacing, It was just that they, sort of touted themselves as having this massive open ocean, but didn't really put anything in it.
Exactly, and it just, aside from these tiny little islands and, fishing a couple things out with your crane, and you're like, the simple fact is none of this is really worth it. And, unless I just feel like sitting here doing nothing in my game... I that's literally what I'm doing, is just wasting time. So I think it's totally slowed down the pacing of the entire story, and it made me put down the game more often than I would have liked.
Absolutely.
To just know that Wind I had Waker to go all the way across the map.
For sure, yeah. Wind Waker is my favorite Zelda game, but, it's my favorite Zelda game in between those, 10 to 15 minute stretches where I'm just, in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It takes 8.5 minutes to get across the map in Wind Waker.
And it just feels like a half an hour.
Yeah, it feels really long. The thing is, it's 8.5 minutes doesn't seem that long when you're thinking about it in that context, but 8.5 minutes of doing nothing in a video game is forever.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, absolutely.
And now we've just been joined by Mr. Zach Miller. He has appeared.
I've dug some graves you'll never find.
Dug some graves.
It's a True Detective reference for those of you who watch that show.
I do not.
I'm an episode behind, dude. No spoilers. Come on.
Dude, that's in the intro song.
Is it? I never pay attention to those intros, man. I always fast forward through them. They're eight minutes long.
Oh, the song is great, dude.
This intro song to True Detective is almost as long as the ocean in Wind Waker, is all I'm saying.
Bringing it back. Zelda.
Okay, so now that we've got Zach on the call, Zach, we've just been talking about Zelda, early on, sort of a bit about our structure and some of our sort of wishes and hopes for the next game. So what do you think should happen to Zelda?
Well, I think they should have a kind of a bastardized Four Swords with just three players, and it should be online, but you can't communicate with talking. I think that's really a good way to go. Sorry, no.
I see where this is going.
Yeah, no, I'll be serious. I'll say again what I've said in the past. I would like the Zelda series to kind of go in the direction of, oddly enough, Metal Gear Solid 2, where you are playing a separate campaign with a separate character from Link, but the whole time you can see what Link's been doing. You can, maybe meet up with him once in a while, just kind of get at Link's story from a distance so that some of the grandeur or the incredibleness of what he's doing and his heroic status is seen from a different vantage point.
Right. Yeah, that's I think that'd be great. I mean, I think one of the things everyone remembers about Majora's Mask, other than that it's very weird, is that, it's all the actual masks and being able to play as, having that sort of differentiate up the gameplay a little bit. I mean, I'd love to play a Zelda game as a Goron.
Yeah.
I think that would be awesome.
Like a Goron who's going on his own quest that ties into Link's, but he doesn't realize how. That kind of a thing. I'd like them to develop the characters around Link more.
And it would be interesting because they could almost incorporate, almost like, several other games have done it where they can do multiple storylines that sort of make up the entire context of the story. So you don't actually know Link's full quest until you've actually played the multiple characters that have encountered him throughout the story. That would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys think that this sort of direction would be good for, like, the flagship mainline game, or more of a side, sort of like a spin-off almost?
I want to see in the mainline game, because otherwise it will have no influence on the mainline game.
I think it would be risky, because I think fans would definitely be like, oh my god, I don't get to play as Link, what the hell is this? but
it depends how it's done, I suppose.
Fans
seem to like Hyrule Warriors.
And that's true.
Yeah.
You play as a million characters in that.
Yeah.
I think it would be one of those things that would get weird reception at first. Like when they changed the art style for Wind Waker and everybody was like, ugh, what? Ugh.
Yeah.
Then everybody actually played it and they loved the game. So I think it would be something that it would start off with kind of mixed reception. But I think you're right. I think if they didn't make it the main line, it just wouldn't get that much attention and people would totally dismiss it. As just, that spin-off game. I don't even need to play it because it's not Zelda canon or whatever.
This is moving into territory of what I was going to touch on later in the discussion, but may as well bring it up now. So, everyone talks about wanting a female Link or some sort of playable female character, right? So let's jump into that discussion, because I had an idea earlier this morning about a possible way to accomplish this, maybe. I don't know if I want a female Link, but I wouldn't mind maybe a playable Zelda in a game. So just what happens if, say, Link was in some sort of, for lack of a better idea at the moment, parallel world, and he was inside some like massive temple? That's the only gameplay that Link gets in this game is dungeon and temple gameplay. And Zelda is in Hyrule, and she has to do stuff on the Hyrule side to help Link get through the dungeon on the dungeon side. Yeah. So you could split them up like that. I thought that might be interesting, like switching back and forth between Zelda and Link to accomplish like the overall goal.
Look, I would rather play as Zelda than just play as a female Link. Not because I don't think that there should be a female Link, but he's such a blank slate that just making him a woman would basically just be a palette swap. It doesn't really bring anything new. I'd much rather just play a full Zelda game as Zelda, honestly.
You wouldn't have to be playing as Zelda necessarily or a female Link. It could be a separate character entirely.
Sure, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought there was that concept art that came out a while ago for Hyrule Warriors, I think. It was like meant to be
Like Link's sister or
Link's
whatever.
Sister. I like that design. Sure. Yeah, that looked cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a totally cool design. I just think it's sort of like if that was like their big, you know, like it just seems like a weird half measure.
I don't think it would. I agree with Carl. I don't think it would accomplish anything to make Link female, because Link doesn't have much personality already. He's not really supposed to, besides just being, you know, the heroic knight kind of character. So, you know, you want a female character for representation, and she's not going to get it by being a female Link. Yeah. She's just going to be, you know, another, you know, just character. Nobody's going to really necessarily cling on to her as the canon for Zelda, because odds are she's going to be in maybe one or two games at the most. But if you actually really wanted to go the way of female representation, it would be much better to do something like either explore a new character altogether or explore Zelda, frankly, because she has been in the franchise since the very beginning. And we've never seen her in an individualistic role that we want to acknowledge. We don't talk about Wand of Camelon, but we started to see some more of her character and her own initiative crop up in Skyward Sword. And I, for one, just being a girl, was actually really interested to see that they chose to make her a different character than just the distant princess that you never got to encounter.
A shame that she was always like a step ahead.
Exactly.
You never really saw what the heck she was doing.
Exactly.
I would have liked to have played Zelda's quest.
Hey, Zach, quick spoiler there. during the credits, you see what she did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
But I will never see that because that game is shitty. Like, it would have been interesting to actually get to play like her and Impa, because obviously, they had a lot of, you know, tough encounters, just as much as Link had to go through finding his quest, they had to find theirs. It was a whole parallel story that didn't get explored, and that kind of thing would really be interesting to see in a future game.
Right. And because Zelda's primary skill set isn't in sort of a sword and shield and sort of these, you know, various items that Link has, she sort of is more in sort of the magic area and sort of a few different kinds of items, that fundamentally changes the gameplay, which fundamentally changes how you interact with the world.
Definitely.
And so, you know, again, I feel like I'm all for a Zelda-driven Zelda game.
Yeah.
But, you know, I definitely wouldn't, again, I wouldn't want her to just sort of end up being a palette swap of Link. I'd really would want to see sort of her own take on the world and sort of how she interacts with it. You know?
And by the same token, I wouldn't mind something parallel either, just so you could actually have like the magic gameplay for a while if you wanted, and then you could swap and do the sword and shield and traditional item based system. It would be really cool to have them both together, actually, too.
It would be interesting to have two playable characters that are right next to each other, sort of like you could swap to the lead character. Like the other one tags along and you can swap out, maybe.
That would be good for two-player co-op, too.
Yeah.
Sure.
They could finally do multiplayer, aside from just four swords.
Yeah. So, and I mean, just to sort of go on that thread, I mean, while we're talking about co-op, I mean, it would be amazing to be able to explore dungeons in co-op, and being able to do sort of those two-person puzzles. I mean, one of the things I really loved about Wind Waker were those dungeons where you had, you know, the sages with you, and so you had to swap between them to sort of solve those puzzles together. How great would it be to be able to do two puzzles where it's actually two people playing together, and you had to solve certain puzzles in tandem, especially if that was online co-op? I mean, I think that these are areas in which you can fundamentally change the way that we play Zelda without completely turning your back on the sort of traditional gameplay style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I honestly thought, Carl, to your point in Wind Waker, I liked those parts, but I really hated having to swap between them all the time. Do that animation every time you want to control one of the other characters.
Yeah, the mechanics there were a bit clunky because, you know, you had to control both, and the only way they wanted to do that was making you activate this stupid song every single time.
Yeah, that was a little clunky.
So maybe we'll just head back a little bit to some of the other elements that I've got listed down here. So one of my other ideas, in terms of dungeons, this is sort of envisioning, or basically the open world sort of idea, maybe the possible Zelda Wii U game. So going back to that sort of open world discussion. Now, you know, if we had the items out in the overworld, like I was saying before, and you had to get various, you could get any item sort of in any order, some temples and dungeons may not be possible to complete say, you know, you could introduce more backtracking. So one of the ideas I had to sort of maybe overcome some of those issues would be to take an idea from Mario Galaxy and make smaller dungeons, smaller, more like not bite-sized, but just smaller in scale to the usual Zelda dungeon, but just have a lot more of them scattered around the overworld.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Zelda's already sort of attuned to that. Usually the first dungeon you accomplish in Zelda is sort of like one of those mini bite-sized dungeons. Mm-hmm. So having more of those scattered around, I think, would be great.
I mean, there's what, usually, say there's roughly like 8 or 9 full dungeons in a Zelda game these days. I'm thinking more upping that to more like closer to 20. Like, make a lot more, but like, you know, obviously you'd have some bigger ones still. You need that, but yeah, it's just an idea, yeah.
Well, that's what Darksiders 2 does.
It
has, the special edition has all sorts of optional dungeons. I don't know if it's all sorts. Maybe it's like 5 total, but you definitely need certain items to get through those things, and you have to return when you get the right item. Dude, Darksiders 2 is a Zelda game.
It totally is. Yeah. It absolutely... I don't think they've ever really even tried to hide that, you know.
Not at all.
You know, and so the fact that they've been able to sort of beat it at its own game, to borrow a weird phrasing, is a little embarrassing. I mean, I think honestly, Nintendo just needs to make a few concessions, and they would really inject a lot of life back into the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, I'd kind of like this might be a little what do you call it? Too far in the wrong direction, but I'd almost like to see a Zelda that doesn't take place in medieval times, but more recent times.
Whoa, that's a little bit too... No, I don't like that at all.
No,
because...
Like, the eventual bloodlines of Link and Zelda, or whoever it's going to be, you know, move beyond the Bronze Age...
Yeah, that just immediately brings to mind like Assassin's Creed, and it just gives me a cringe feeling.
I just don't want to see some kid going back into the mind of Link.
Yeah, I don't want that at all.
No, thank you. No time travel stories, please.
No, none of that. No, not at all.
You know, I mean, Link could be like a move to a new school, and he's really like his idol called Zelda.
I feel like we're getting into fanfiction territory now.
this is. No.
Yeah, no. I mean, like, in Zelda games, they have, more recent ones, they have sort of thrown in slightly more modern technology. I mean, they sort of pick and choose depending on the game. I mean, there was steam engines in Spirit Tracks.
Yeah.
Sure.
Skyward Sword had, like, weird time dilation and lasers and things.
That was actually really interesting. I liked that.
Yeah, that was the best part.
I mean, it wouldn't have to be, like, a modern... Era, it could be like the future or something, you know, Zelda. Just different technology, different aesthetics.
I mean, didn't Link's crossbow training start out with Miyamoto saying we could do like a Terminator story here?
Dude.
Link in sunglasses.
I would buy that.
You would buy that.
You would. How many of us would buy that?
I would not buy that.
You'd buy that, Carl.
I would probably buy that.
I would probably borrow it.
Yeah.
So what other elements could be like, do we want to see? I mean, Skyward Sword added in some item upgrading stuff, like your shield and various other items. I didn't really get into that. I just tried to push through the game with like the most basic weapons.
I felt like it was tedious half the time. I was like, it didn't really change up the gameplay enough to really be worth it most of the time. I started to upgrade my items, and then it just became a, you know, I hate myself and I like to run games 100%, so I upgraded everything.
I would do the same thing.
I didn't go that way. I just sort of tried to ignore it as much as possible, and then every single time I picked up a clear gel, I would get angry because it took me out to a little, like, showing you the menu and putting it into your inventory.
Yeah.
I hate that stuff.
I hate it when that's like, every time you turn the game back on, it feels the need to tell you you got 5 rupees, like you didn't know what that means.
I understand the
first
time.
This is a miracle.
The first time ever you pick up a rupee, sure. Show how much it's worth, but...
Yeah.
Every like, time I you mean, turn the game on.
Ocarina of Time style, when you're like, okay, I picked up a magic jar, now I know what this means. Never again do I need to know what this is. Right. I mean, sure as heck don't need to know what a blue rupee is. Trust me, I got it.
A lot of that stuff they've tried like added over the years, it just seems like weird. I mean, I'm glad they got rid of it in A Link Between Worlds, and I hope that carries through to Zelda Wii U, because it's just irritating, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't mind seeing them mix up your equipment abilities, though. Things like getting different armor sets or getting different sorts of weapons. Why does it always have to be the damn Master Sword?
I mean, just even combining weapons. I mean, in A Link's Awakening, you could shoot bombs on your arrows, right? Like,
right. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that was awesome.
I mean, why couldn't you get a slingshot and instead of equipping the pellets, you can equip a bomb or something, you know?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they wouldn't be like new items. They would just be combining other items you already have. So.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things I'd really like to see is almost see if they're going to go with the open world aspect, and, you know, obviously, you know, as we learned in A Link Between Worlds, sometimes you're going to have to backtrack a lot in order to get exactly what you need in order to go in a dungeon. I want to see the world develop, not just stay the same, or, you know, the same things all the time that you can do. And so once you're done with an area, you're almost permanently done with it, really. You know, I'd like to see new things crop up and just, like, I mean, I don't know, if a village gets destroyed, see it actually, like, rebuilding itself while you're going through your quest and whatnot. It would just be really, really interesting, and it would make the world feel like it has a point in being open, not just, you know...
They do that in Pirate's Curse.
Yeah, and it just makes everything so much more interesting, and it feels like the world... Again, it feels like the world has a point.
Like, know, some of my favorite parts in Ocarina of Time were when you... like fixed up areas, you know, like the volcano became like the thing above the volcano became clear again, and what is it, the lake was filled up again and stuff like that. That was cool.
Zora's like, domain unfreezes.
No it doesn't which is which is unfortunate.
No, that was always one of those like rumors that everybody said, if you do this and if you do this and if you tilt your head sideways and squint, it unfreezes.
And the king will give you the Triforce.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there's even a bit of that in Zelda with like that that fire, the volcano and the ice sort of area, that all that stuff melting. I mean, just sort of seeing your effect on the world.
That's what I mean.
Is really what you want to see. Yeah. I mean, you know, just being able to sort of... You know, not only everyone in a village saying, "Gosh, thanks, you're a real swell guy," but just sort of in fact seeing, you know, areas of the game change and alter based on your actions would be really great.
What do you guys think? Because like, if you're going to have more freedom, if they're going to try and ape Skyrim a little bit and stuff like that, do you think they're going to give you the choice to sort of be a little bad? I mean, are you going to be able to burn down someone's house?
Come on. In Majora's Mask, you roll into a tree and knock a guy on his face every 3 days. I did that. I took his money every time.
In The Link's Awakening, you could steal from the shop and then your name would be branded thief for the rest
of the time. I could do stuff like that. That'd I did that too for the picture. Just for the picture.
Yep, me too.
I couldn't do it because I don't like being branded thief. It's stupid, but I want my name to stay.
I named myself Thief one time just because I knew I was going to do it.
You know what I would really love to see? Like, have your failures result in, like, negative things happening, again, to the world. Like, say you pick up a side quest and then you never finish it. Maybe in a few days, like, that person that needed your help is now screwed. And, like, some bad stuff happens to that person.
Yeah,
and,
like, now, his legs broke.
Exactly. Like, dude, that Goron was coming back for his money in 3 days. Like, what are you doing, man? So, it would be really great if, like, you know, you would actually be able to, just again, have more of an effect on the world.
Yeah.
It would also just give more weight to to those side quests and filler portions, because it would actually feel like it's contributing to the overall experience.
So I'd almost have to bring in the time frame for Majora's Mask again to actually have limits and stuff, which most people hated about that game.
I don't think you would really have to bring back the full Majora's Mask system for that. I mean, depending on how long the in-game days last, if someone says you've got 3 days to do this, you'll know when the, like, you know, you'll see the sun and
timer could start or something.
A timer could start.
Well,
I mean,
you could have kind of like a quest log that would alert you, you know, to, okay, it's been 2 days
already. A bomber's notebook, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
A notebook. But yeah, so, I mean, you could actually, like, again, see your effect on, you know, whether or not you've completed your side quests, you know?
I mean, how cool would it be if the news game is, like, it's sort of set in, like, a future Terminator, and, like, the bombers are really, really old now, and they're, like, a secret society?
They're the Illuminati.
Yeah, the Illuminati.
Exactly. They're pulling the strings, man.
Yeah.
So what do you guys... I'll just say it. It needs to have voice acting.
You know what?
Whatever they do.
I don't know.
I don't think it does.
I felt like they did it all right with the gibberish that they chose to do. I think it worked, honestly.
I don't think they need voice acting. I just think they need less text.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't need Link and everyone else to talk. But if that's going to be the case, like, there needs to be less, like, paragraph
monologues.
After paragraph of monologues. Yeah, just have less of that.
Yeah. But, you know, like, having some voice
or
acting...
Or have, like,
know,
face some fake Animal Crossing-esque language going on while people talk. I don't want to hear things like, you know, that's the whole game right now.
Yeah, no, I like the gibberish talking. I mean, it worked really well in, like, Okami. It works really well in Animal Crossing, where they just, you know, talk in syllables you're not actually supposed to understand. So it makes it feel like voice acting, but you don't actually have to, you know, ruin everybody's childhood and give Link
I mean,
a voice.
They could try and work out, like, vocalizations for the Hyrulean language and make it sort of like Star Fox Adventures. You have your own language that's sort of gibberish, but, you know, they're actually saying full words and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, you know, I don't see them doing voice acting and everyone being like, man, there's some really amazing writing and voice acting performances in that Zelda game. I just don't see it, you know, being the case.
No, I feel like
certainly after Other M, there's going to be a lot of critical eyes on the dialogue.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, it would help make the Zelda feel more modern in a sense.
It would make it feel a lot more 10 years ago in a sense.
Yeah, but I mean, that's better than 20 years ago, 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, but like Carl was saying, they might just opt to have hardly, you know, a lot less text in the game, especially if it's more open world. I imagine the story is going to be a bit more, even more bare bones than it has been in the past few games.
Yeah.
So it'll probably just hopefully be a lot more just environmental stuff, and the NPCs that you interact with, it'll just be short sort of, you know, short stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind having to read, you know, a bit of text here and there. That's fine. It's just the matter of, you know, when you get to the main cutscene of the game and you realize you're just reading paragraph after paragraph for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Of honestly pretty stilted dialogue anyway. Like, you know, if they want to have that, it might as well at least be good writing, and it's usually not.
It's nothing special.
Yeah. Right. So I would just opt for less text. That would be my vote.
Or let the treehouse just completely rewrite it and go nuts.
Sure, yeah.
This looks like Link's doing this. Let's just say this.
Bad lip readings for Legend of Zelda.
When Ganon's giving his speech up on the tower in Wind Waker, he doesn't say, the winds of revenge or whatever. It's like, fuck all y'all.
I'm out.
I'm out.
You're
I'm taking
die.
You bitches with me.
I mean, I like that little snippet from Ganondorf on the top of the tower as the waves are crashing down. That's kind of cool.
But... Oh, yeah.
I actually do like that scene as well. It's real hammy, but I actually really like it.
You have that bit of breeze go past his face because he wanted to have the winds of Hyrule. You know, he wanted that for his own land, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why he took over Hyrule, but...
We can't get rid of all the blocks of text, because I'm not going to lie that the Link and Zelda monologue and Skyward Sword, where you finally get to meet up with her, I was like, oh my god, I love this. Like,
yeah, I mean,
it stop.
You know, it,
might
it's,
cry a
it's,
little
you
bit.
Know, Yeah, I mean, there's always a you know, areas here and there where I think it's okay, and it's, you know, it does its job well. But yeah, it's more just sort of in the sort of regular grind of it where it can feel a little cumbersome.
Yeah. What and about they need to tell you six times that you need to use this item highlighted in red. Item highlighted in red.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Did you know this item highlighted in red?
Yeah.
What about, like, because we were saying how we would, like, maybe want to see some more effects on the world and things. What happens if they added, like, a basic dialogue, like, tree? You can have a couple of choices every now and then to change the event somehow. You know, not Mass Effect level, but, you know, somewhere like that, going that direction.
Mm. So the guy who's, the Goron's going to break his legs, you could say to him, man, you got into this on your own.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's a little thing that says, like, Goron will remember you said that. A la Telltale.
Instead of just telling Zelda no 16 times and having her be like, please, please stop telling me no, but this doesn't do anything.
What do you want to do with my chickens? Hit them?
Why do you keep coming here for chickens? What's the deal? What are you doing with all these chickens?
Cooking.
They bring in snake eater elements, and you can eat chickens and things.
Oh my gosh! If they brought that in, I would be all in. That would
like
be
Link
so
living
great.
On the range.
Hunt your own game in the field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be interesting. I feel like Link needs to eat. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to pop a squat now and then. Just like Nathan Drake, man.
Just you goes know, days and days with nothing, no sleep.
I know.
Except at the beginning of the game. He's always sleeping at the beginning, just never, ever again.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Perpetual. Yeah. Well, they need to give Link a perpetually untucked tunic. There you go.
Wait, don't you just take the belt off? What are you talking about? like what I was just about to say was, like, Monster Hunter is pretty popular. Having some elements like that may be good, because they've said in Zelda Wii U that they're going to try and populate the overworld with enemies, right?
Yep.
What happens if you could like use like stuff from enemies for items, or even like regain some health or whatever?
Yeah,
that could be pretty good.
Roast some bokoblin leg. Just be like, ooh, this looks good.
Exactly, just like roast a bokoblin leg to like refill your hearts or something.
Yeah.
I mean, you could
find... I like that idea. I think that'd be great. Some of the quests could be, go kill this monster, he's terrorizing the village.
Mm-hmm. And then you could just eat it.
Oh, like a la, like, Shadow of Mordor? Like, you gotta, like, there's like an entire, like, bokoblin society, and you gotta, like, take it down from, like, the top.
Yes. Yes.
It's possible something like this could happen, because the teaser that we got for Zelda... You know, more than one person said that it was reminiscent of Princess Mononoke, the opening scenes of that movie. Like, you could have a monster terrorizing a village, and Link sort of strolls in and is like, oh, okay, I'm going to kill it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know what I'd really like? Not for it to not be a rehash of Link versus Ganon. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Right?
Link versus Ganon. Whoever wins, we lose.
Exactly. Yeah, like, give us a new enemy, or like a new guy that to take down. I mean, honestly, it'd be really great if like the main bad guy was like a moblin or something. Like what if like one of those dudes like rose up and he's like,
you
he's
that.
Like, you know,
I said in Skyward Sword we thought we had that with, you were like, oh yeah, Ghirahim, this is a, oh nope, there's he's back. Yeah, nope. Dang it.
Yeah. it's just the original Ganon. It's just like him.
Yeah,
but before.
Basically.
Yeah.
Proto
like,
Ganon.
He got the pig face.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, it's hard. I guess it's sometimes difficult to come up with good, like, new villains. Like, Ganon's got so much history within the series. I mean, what do you do to make the new character different enough that is interesting? And, like, because most of the time when they introduce side villains, most of the time you're just sort of like, yeah, they're all right, but.
And let's not forget that Vatty is a pretty crappy villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never liked Vatty.
I liked what they chose to do, again, in Ocarina of Time, where they actually split him from the original Ganon mythos, really, with, you know, okay, he's not the big giant pig monster anymore, he's this actual, like, human-looking guy, he's just a dude with magical powers, and then all of a sudden he becomes Pigman. Well, you're like, okay, sort of your final boss is still Ganon, but it made sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
that's sort of the place I always approach Zelda from, really, now, because Ocarina of Time is the first Zelda game I played, so I always picture him as Ganondorf, like, all the time, and think of him in that way. I don't really care for the pig Ganon, like, doesn't really do anything.
You know, eventually, the Mega Man X games did away with Sigma being the final boss. He was always kind of involved, but the last few games in the X series, he would be too weak to defeat X and Zero, and the new guy would take over, and the new guy was the final boss.
Right.
And that was, I always thought that was a good way to do it. Like, eventually somebody has to replace Sigma, and eventually somebody's got to replace Ganondorf.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I don't necessarily even, because here's the thing, like, I think it comes down to the way that a lot of people think about it, you know, which is basically, well, if it's not Ganondorf, are there stakes? And I don't necessarily know that that's the right way to think about it. I mean, does it need to be Link saving the world even? Can it be something a little bit more of a smaller scale story? Can it be Link saving, like, this singular village, like in Termina, you know? Like, he, you know, yes, he's essentially saving the world because the moon's going to, like, kill everybody. But, like, it's really all about this central location, and it wasn't about, you know, broader Hyrule. And the stakes were still large, but it didn't feel like the same sort of rehashing of, oh, gotta save the world.
Yeah.
Like,
Majora's Mask was the most successful, like, Ganon-less game I think they've done. Because it did feel pretty epic. It did feel important still.
And it didn't, it didn't have the typical Zelda tropes of get these three jewels to get the Master Sword, and there's the Triforce over here, and and, you know, and I like that change up a lot.
I mean, look at, even look at the mobile games, something like Link's Awakening, which is probably my second favorite Zelda
God game. Damn it, don't say they're mobile games, Carl. They're handheld games.
Handhelds.
Whatever, dude. It's all the same. And you know, it's a side story, but I think, it, you know, a lot of people looked at that one as sort of carrying the same weight as any of the console Zelda games.
Oh,
it's a well done small story.
Yeah.
It's all a dream.
Or was it?
Or was it, though? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He saw that big whale.
Right? Credits, man. The initial Marvel end credit scene was that
one. And he saw, he saw the girl with butterfly wings, or whatever the hell that was.
What?
It's been so long since I beat
that game. Yeah, that's if you 100% that game, at the end of the credits, the girl floats around with little sprite wings.
Oh,
when, how have I not beat that game 100%? Like, what?
Yeah, I know. Shame on me.
That's why you're not working for NWR anymore.
Oh. Nope.
Okay. So, any final thoughts? Anything else you guys want to touch on before we wrap up this segment?
Just keep it simple, Nintendo. Come on.
No crappy water levels.
I don't think they'll do any of this.
No. No. Correct. Zach is correct. This will all be for naught.
I'm at least hopeful that Zelda Wii U is going to try some different things. It's going to hopefully be ambitious. That's all we really want, I think, is Nintendo to be trying to push the envelope again. I mean, they haven't done that for a while with Zelda, really. I mean, some of that is technical limitations.
A little tiny bit with Link Between Worlds, and I think that was a good path to start, and I hope they continue that.
I was mainly talking about the console ones just then, but
you're right.
The Link Between Worlds is a good starting place, and I hope they can expand on that and fix any problems they had with the Link Between Worlds and sort of bring that up in scope to Zelda Wii U.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we're going to take another break and we'll be back with some listener mail questions.
Thank you.
And welcome back. We're going to jump into some listener mail now. So for the first question, I'll pass it off to Zach.
Oh,
Zach, you
want
to take the first question?
I will. Dan from St. Louis writes, for better or worse, the entire internet has weighed in on Nintendo's decision to not include voice chat in Splatoon. Do you have any memorable voice chat moments? Anything you've said that you're not particularly proud of? What's the worst thing you've ever screamed over a microphone to yourself? I think he meant to say
you've
at somebody.
Had screamed over a microphone to you.
Oh, you've ever
to you.
Oh, I see. Okay, to you.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I can't read today.
I'll answer that last part, that last question. I mean, there's obviously the cavalcade of insults and slurs that anyone would expect, but the thing that hurt the most was when Metroid Prime Hunters came out on DS, because that actually had voice chat.
That had voice chat.
I think it was the first Nintendo game that had voice chat, I believe.
You're right.
And I was playing it with actually former NWR PGC staffer Dan Bloodworth, now of Game Trailers and illustrious fame. And he and I played around, and he at the end of it, he just said, "Wow, you're really bad at this."
And you never touched Metroid again.
And I vowed to never return.
Kyle, do me a favor and stop playing the game.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, can you just leave our team so that someone better can jump in? I was like, oh.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's a terrible thing to say to a 15-year-old. No, I'm just kidding.
It really is.
the whole thing that, like, the memorable thing was just honestly whenever I'm playing with friends. I mean, voice chat isn't super important to me if I'm playing with strangers, but if I'm playing with friends, then I want to be able to have voice chat, just because it's what's the point then, you know?
Definitely.
These are people who I talk to anyway, and so it's nice being able to trash talk or just generally talk about, you know, just basically
strategy.
Sometimes funny things happen while you're just, like, you know, scurrying around.
Exactly.
And you can't type those kinds of things or something. I mean, I don't know. I play plenty of games where I have a wireless keyboard and typing just doesn't do it.
Totally. Yeah, no, it's just fun to have that stuff available. It's really just the option, really. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So what you seem to be saying is that the option to say either booyah or come on is not enough.
No.
You know, I need at least one more option.
One more synonym between booyah and come on, perhaps yay.
Yay could cut it. It might just be yay. I might just be missing yay.
I mean, Nintendo's got two more D-pad directions that they can assign to random phrases in Splatoon. I don't know why they didn't use all four things. Somebody
DLC.
Could be saying we're losing or paint the floor, you idiots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I haven't...
It's what DLC's for.
I don't actually play that many online games a whole lot.
Yeah, me neither.
And I've never really used voice chat with randoms ever, basically. Except for a short time on the 360 where I was playing... I downloaded that poker app, the poker game. I got addicted to poker because we were having, like, monthly poker nights with my friends as well. So
nice.
I downloaded that.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, I'll play poker for a while. And I was like... It was kind of fun talking to randoms on that, but aside from that, no. And I don't really swear or anything, so I wouldn't hurl abuse at anyone.
I can't say I wouldn't. I'm really bad with that, like, in my own room playing with people, just as long as I'm not on a microphone, just being like, what the hell do you think you're doing?
Yeah, if I'm playing with friends, you know, that definitely tends to come out. I think with sort of strangers, though, I'm always acutely aware that I could be talking to a 12-year-old, and that just is enough to make me not want to.
I've never gotten anything really mean. It's just a lot of the time you get. I mean, you see all these College Humor videos about girls playing online games. That's true. That's like 90% of what you get when they find out you're a girl on voice chat. They're like, ooh.
Really?
It's weird. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's just like,
so, I mean, I can,
do you just do this in public every single time you see anybody with boobs? Really?
And the worst part is that they probably do.
I know.
But But, you know, the thing is, like, you know, I can understand why Nintendo would be wary of sort of universal voice chat across their online games. I mean, they sort of strive for this family-friendly image, and they want to keep that up, and they don't want to... I think they took to heart all the things that happened in the early days of, like, Xbox Live, where, you know, hearing awful things was pretty much the norm. But honestly, that was, like, 10 years ago. And honestly, more than 10 years ago, in a lot of ways, in many cases. And now it's a matter of them just being ridiculously behind the times, to the point where to be honest with you, like, I think most parents now expect there to be voice chat and understand the dangers involved.
Yeah,
there are parental controls to turn that stuff off now.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can mute people very, very easily in most games, like, especially specific people that are being, like, especially mean or especially graphic in their language. You can actually mute specific microphones in, like, all of the Call of Duty games anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I thought was a really good addition.
Even with all those controls, and it makes sense to us that, you know, if Nintendo puts all these controls in and they're basically, like, if something bad happens to someone, it's not really their fault, right? But... You just know that if something bad happened on a Nintendo system, it would be all throughout the mainstream media. People would be blowing up about it, saying, Nintendo, just because it's Nintendo.
Exactly, because they're supposed to be the family-friendly system. And...
You know, honestly, I don't think that's true, because think of the weirdest, most vile thing you can imagine. It's being said constantly on Miiverse.
Oh.
Absolutely true. It's just being regulated.
Yeah, it's like if you I mean, I follow the Twitter account Bad Miiverse Posts, and I see this shit
me too.
Daily.
So funny as hell.
It's hilarious, but disturbing and weird. Yeah, it's already on Nintendo. Like, really? It's just not being
and
read
it's
aloud.
Not like it's not only disgusting, horrible things. It's also like super personal, maybe I shouldn't say that to random people stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh man, that is one of the best Twitter things you can follow.
You know, I guess the weirdest thing is that they don't put voice chat into their games, but like, even amongst friends, right? Like, there should be an option at least for your own friends to talk to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
On a system level, they have a video chat option.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so, they do.
I mean, no one uses it really, because you can't really tell when someone's calling you, but the point is that a bad person could friend someone on Miiverse or whatever and then start video chatting with someone, you know, like, I guess the possibilities there. Yeah, exactly. Like, so I guess you're right, Carl. Like, bad stuff can already happen with Nintendo systems, so there's really no excuse.
Right.
It would be nice to have the option. I mean, like, that's just it. Is like he was saying, you don't have to talk to people you don't want to talk to, and parents can be vigilant with that. Like, oh, you know, just like when you got on the internet back in 1996, and your parents were like, don't go in chat rooms. People are going to try and find out where you live.
I mean, do you guys remember the blowback on from PictoChat on the Nintendo DS?
Yes.
DictoChat?
Oh dear!
Because that's what it was.
It is still Dicto chat.
Because like a child could be
in a car,
within 30 feet of some predator or something,
right?
Like, you know. But I used to love PictoChat. PictoChat for conventions was so good, because like at the time, I used to watch the cosplay parade at a convention, and pretty much if anyone with a Nintendo DS was on there, they were on PictoChat and just rating all the cosplay and saying
nice.
Funny comments, like
PictoChat. The first E3 I went to, everybody gathered in, I think, me and James's hotel room one night, and we all played PictoChat together, and it was maybe the most incredible multiplayer experience I have ever had.
PictoChat is great. I wish it was on the 3DS.
Absolutely.
So to wrap up this question, I guess we're, you know, we don't really do it, so.
I mean, there's some games where it doesn't make any sense to have it, like Mario Kart. And even Smash Brothers to a degree. But for something like Splatoon, I mean, come on. At least with friends
team
or team members. Yeah.
Even with Mario Kart, I would like the option to just chat with friends.
Absolutely.
That would actually be kind of fun. Sure. I like playing Mario Kart with people and, you know,
the 20 seconds you get between match races.
Sorry, guys.
Is bad, yeah. Okay, so Becky, do you want to take the next question?
Ooh, what is the next question? Oh, scrolling down, sorry. Okay, NintyFan87 says, how often do you guys use guides for games? Do you try and figure it out, or do you guide it up right from the start?
I use guides as soon as it gets annoying.
Absolutely, me too. Yeah. I am too old for that shit.
Sometimes it depends on what it is, but sometimes I'll sort of try a few different things and maybe just like sit there for maybe, you know, 5-10 minutes, and then if I really like thinking maybe I need something else or something, I'll just go straight to a guide. I just don't have time for that now.
Yep.
Oddly enough, Miiverse is a really good thing for getting through tough spots, because people will answer you in about 30 seconds.
Huh. Yeah. For me, as soon as it ceases to be an organic gaming experience where like I'm in it and I'm trying stuff out, and it just becomes me saying like, this is getting really boring and I'm kind of getting tired of this, then it's time to get to the guide, because it's just like I just want to get past it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, when I play Grim Fandango, I loved Grim Fandango back when it first came out, and I just bought the remastered version, well, actually when it came out a few months ago, and whenever I sit down to play it, I have a FAQ open on my smartphone because that game is obtuse as hell.
Mm. Yeah.
And I just want to play it for the story. I'm not interested in making a doohinky out of 3 random objects.
Mm. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, what people always say to me is like, oh, you're not getting the pure gaming experience, which I say, shut up. You don't get extra points for suffering.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm too old for this shit. Like, I'm, you know, I honestly...
I'm a busy adult with other things to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I could be reading a book right now.
If I reasonably can't figure it out, it's you just get to a point where you're like, I'm really just wasting time. And it's not like it adds anything to the game necessarily to totally figure it out by yourself. I mean, it's one thing, I don't like to run a whole game with a guide, but, like, if I'm missing one tiny little thing that I need, like, especially because I tend to be one of those stupid people who hates themselves and runs games as close to 100% as I possibly can.
Oh, me too.
So, you know, I'm missing one treasure over here, and I don't know where it is. And I'm like, am I going to backtrack through this whole damn map, or am I just going to look it up?
A recent example was when we were playing DK64. I told Zach, I bought a guide with that when we were playing it, because if it was like a couple of things left, I just wanted to be able to see where it was really easily.
Yeah.
And last night,
I think it's just amazing you found one.
I bought it off eBay. I know I could have used GameFAQs, but I wanted the maps for it as well.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, another example was Banjo-Tooie last night. There was one Cheeto page that I hadn't found, and I quickly looked down at the guide, and it was inside of a box that I didn't even think you could destroy. So I would never have found it just by wandering around looking for it. So that sort of stuff. I mean, it's a weird sort of like, I don't know what it is, but back in the day especially, there was more of a shame. Like, people were ashamed of using a guide. There was like some weird thing about it. Like, I don't know how it started, but if you use a guide, you should be ashamed of yourself, sort of thing. You know, it sort of stuck around to this day to a degree. I mean, it's weird. Like, I played through Majora's Mask originally with a guide because couldn't do it. I mean, I still had fun with it. I mean, as long as you have fun with it.
I was just super intimidated by the idea of missing something and then, like, constantly having to restart the game because I missed a little thing in a dungeon. Like, I think the first, like, 2 times I tried the Snowhead Temple in... Yeah. The first time I ever played it without a guide, I screwed it up twice. Like, and had to reset and go back and do the whole dungeon over again just because I screwed up one little thing. And it was like,
I honestly kind of miss the golden age of guides, because, like, you know, back in the 90s when you would buy those, like, sweet game guides,
they looked
that were
so
like,
cool.
Full of game art. So cool. Yep. I remember buying issues of Nintendo Power to get, like, the Pokemon maps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Which were awesome. You don't really get that stuff anymore. I mean, I guess the internet,
like, Pokemon handbook guides.
Oh, totally.
I was like, I want to know when this freaking Pokemon evolves. I don't want to have to keep leveling this bastard if I don't have to.
Amen.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I bought I bought a Pokemon Yellow guide back in the day because I was in EB Games, and on the back of it, it said hidden mini game explained, and that was the only reason I bought it, and it wasn't in the guide.
It wasn't
in there.
Ouch.
But it ended up being helpful anyway, because like you're saying with the various types and what the moves they learn at various levels and things, like that was useful.
Yeah.
I bought that kind of guide, Nick, for Pokemon Diamond Pearl.
Yeah.
When I was trying to collect them all. And I did, and I'm glad I had that guide.
Yeah, you basically need it these days. I mean, it's like 800 of the monsters.
And not only that, but like everything, you know, there's different moves that it learns at different phases of its life. So you're like, do I want to evolve it right now? Because it might not learn this really awesome move that it's going to learn. So I'm like, I live on Cerebi half the time whenever I'm playing a Pokemon game, just because I'm like, okay, how do I need to do this?
Those things are useful now just to see the types, because the Pokemon have such bizarre type configurations now.
Yeah, there's like dual types, and then they've added more and more types over the years too. So, like, if you're got a flying fire Pokemon, you know.
Exactly. I'm like, I don't know what this is weak against anymore. What?
Yeah, that's honestly a whole other discussion of like the weird like cross pollination of types in Pokemon. I miss when it was just elements. You know, it was real simple, real easy.
Water beats now it's fire, like done.
Exactly. Like this Pokemon is a somersault type. Well, what does that even mean? Like, what is this? Yeah, it's very bizarre. It's gotten quite bizarre.
I mean, getting back to the guide question, like you're saying, guides were pretty cool back in the day, but some of the more recent ones are still cool. Like, they put out those hardcover Zelda ones and Mario Galaxy. Like, those Prima guides with the hardcovers are really cool. I mean, I've got the Mario Galaxy ones. I've got a hard copy sealed still, which I ended up finding somewhere for $2 once.
Ooh.
So I keep holding on to that to maybe put out as a contest or something. But
that'd be cool.
Those guides are cool, and they come with the Zelda ones at least come with cloth maps and things.
Yeah.
Oh, really? So, I didn't know that.
Mm.
I remember they had one of those fancy hardcover ones for the train game, whatever the hell the train one was called.
Spirit Tracks.
Yeah.
Spirit Tracks. And it was an enormous guide, and I thought, how much content is in this stupid game? And it was at Barnes & Noble, and they tend to shrink wrap their bigger books, players' guides and comic books, which sucks. So I didn't get to look through it, but I thought, wow, this is really fancy for a handheld Zelda.
All right, I guess we'll move on to the last question. Do you want to take that one, Kyle?
Sure. So, Simtendo says, with the advent of DLC and Nintendo going heavy into it with Mario Kart and Smash and Splatoon likely following suit, do you feel we are moving towards an age where the game itself is a platform with release updates throughout the generation, i.e. release the base version of Smash early and then iterate on it throughout the generation, turning the game into a six-year Smash title instead of one and done?
Well, nobody's done that ever.
Yeah.
It would be nice.
It seems like Nintendo is moving in somewhat down that direction. I mean, Mario Kart had a lot of DLC, which was released a year later. Smash is receiving regular updates into the future. And Splatoon will maybe follow, at least not with DLC, but the way they're doling out content that's already on the disc is similar to keep people playing, keep people interested, and it could be good putting out a base game as sort of have enough content on it to begin with, but then say, okay, we've got a 3-year plan for this game, we're going to put out major content releases for the next 3 years for this game, so people will buy more. So depending on how much content it is, they could charge $20 a year for updates to a game.
I like that idea. I just don't know if anyone's ever done it before.
Well, you look at things like the season pass that you get, other titles on PSN and such. And honestly, I loved the Mario Kart DLC. I happily paid for both of it, and I've gotten a lot of time out of it. I'll gladly pay for more of it as it comes out. for me, as for whether or not these games are becoming platforms, I think there's a bit of a slippery slope there, wherein, you know, there's a worry that what you're getting at launch isn't necessarily a full game, yeah. but rather the sort of starter pack for what's to come later. I think as long as we don't get into that territory, I'm perfectly fine with it. I mean, I think that there was plenty and a lot of content in both Smash and Mario Kart, and I haven't played Splatoon yet, but I assume it's the same case where there's plenty of content already there.
To me, Splatoon is teetering on the edge of being unreasonable, but they're not charging for the stuff they're unlocking.
True,
They could have put out the base game with all this stuff unlocked to begin with, but instead they're just unlocking it each week, basically, to sort of dole out the content. It's already on the disc, but like, if you had to pay for that stuff, that would be bad. That would
definitely. I think they chose a good route with not making it paid DLC, but it's kind of like... was that a choice from the beginning, or was that just okay, we probably shouldn't do this because maybe, we got feedback and the game is a little scant to start with.
Mm. Right.
Right.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of unlocking things already on the disc. That to me just seems cheap. But in cases like the Mario Kart DLC, which I think has been absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I'm all for that. You know,
I mean, the value for money on the Mario Kart stuff is so good too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
it's much better in Mario Kart than it is, I think, for Smash.
Yeah,
I wish that there had been a season pass for Smash because I would have bought it. Because buying these characters on their own for, I think the trick is that they're coming out for both versions of the game, just makes it more expensive overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish I could have bought a season pass that covered both games. I probably would have paid $30 for it or something. But even however much it costs total. But doling it out little by little when Ryu's like $4 and Ness is $4, Lucas is $4, it's tough to swallow piecemeal.
Zach, you can buy all the content in one giant pack if you wanted to.
Oh, I know you can. When they release content packs, you can buy it all at once, but the point is they release multiple content packs.
No, I'm saying there's one pack you can buy that includes everything.
Really?
For like, or at least in the Australian eShop it is. You can spend like $30 or $35 and get everything for both systems.
But does that include future stuff?
Oh, no, not future.
That's what
stuff.
I'm saying. Yeah. I want a season pass.
Right. Well, I mean, that's kind of how it was that's kind of how it was with Mario Kart when they announced those two DLC packs. You were able to buy everything coming out at the outset, and then basically as it was released, it just automatically downloaded. Mm.
Yeah, exactly. And if you prepaid for both packs, you got the Yoshi skin color change as well.
Yes,
sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is like, and the Shy Guys.
Yeah, and the Shy Guys, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I don't know why they wouldn't have just adopt that same system. It worked so well on Mario Kart. It was so seamless. Like, it really, I have to give Nintendo credit. It worked extremely well. So
and
I don't
it was
know why
worth,
they
definitely
wouldn't
worth the
that
money
out.
That you paid for it.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it was a great deal. It was great.
The only thing, like, with all these differing ways of handling DLC, the only thing that sort of, like, comes to mind is basically them trying out all these different approaches and seeing which one is received the best, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
They could just be... Or it could just be down to the individual development teams. They're like, we're going to do it this way, and they don't talk to each other.
Yeah, but I mean, it just sort of speaks again to Nintendo being behind the times. Like, I feel like these are the same experiments that we saw, 8 years ago when we first saw like horse armor on the
2005.
Yeah, for Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Like, it was the same deal. Like, where they were trying all these new DLC packages, and we had to go through those growing pains. Like, Nintendo should have just seen what happened. Like, they know what the deal is already, like, and they've already done it well, so it just seems strange to me that they're still trying to iterate on this
it's because their whole online game is so behind the times that they're still trying to figure it out. Like, I was quantified it, I was really surprised at how little online play there was on any of the Wii or Wii U.
Oh, right? I know, right?
Yeah, when I actually made a list, I was like, holy, are you kidding me? No
yeah,
wonder
there's
I've
really
never
only three online games on Wii U that anyone probably pays attention to.
I mean,
and
we've
named them all. I think the only other one might be Sonic and Sega All-Stars Transform, but who plays that anymore?
But That's why we
couldn't even get that to work at the time. I tried playing online. Yeah, well, it was a bit weird. Yeah,
and like the precedent, like to all of this, their Wii online play was just god awful. Like it never worked in anything. Like Brawl was just a freaking hell. Broken. It was torture. Yeah. It was broken. Yeah.
GoldenEye was all right, actually.
Yeah. I actually played Mario Kart online on that one.
Wii was all right.
Yeah, Mario Kart Wii was all right, too.
Honestly, you know, I remember Strikers being pretty good.
Actually, yeah, that was good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mario Strikers was actually pretty decent.
But everyone cheated, like...
Yeah, it's so easy to cheat in that game. It's so freaking easy. Yeah,
I wish they... it's another discussion, but I prefer the GameCube one. It's more about soccer and less about being crazy and jumping over the goalie.
Agreed, yeah.
The next one needs Mega Mushrooms. That'll make it really work.
Just that'll like make it Mario key. Tennis Mega Mushrooms. Oh, God.
So, yeah, I guess that's pretty much it for that question, really. You know, we would like to see them like try to move in this direction. It would be good. The only issue I have with it is it's sort of like a... Most people probably won't care that much, but, you know, preserving these games, I mean... If you have the disc copy of the base game in 2 years, it's pretty much useless because if you ever lost your like downloads to it,
right,
you only have the base game with no updates. So, right. I mean, Splatoon's going to be almost, the discs for Splatoon is going to be pretty much worthless outside of the single player. I would say Mario Kart 8 and Smash would be in the same boat already. I mean, I don't want to play the disc only version of Mario Kart 8 anymore.
Sure. I mean, what's going to happen in a few years when the NX comes out, and I assume the Wii U games are going to be compatible, am I going to be able to bring in all of my Mario Kart 8 DLC on the NX? How's that going to work?
Well, yeah, is it going to be even backwards compatible with the Wii U? They're not going to sell gamepads. Are they just going to make it backwards compatible for the Wii U only players? I mean, are they going to make it backwards compatible for 10 million players? I mean,
it's going to be an absolute mess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
It's gonna see. That's gonna be interesting to see how that actually functions in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, just kind of a side story here. I learned this on Twitter last night. You know how have you guys played Zeo Drifter on 3DS?
No. I have not.
No.
Well, it's a fun little game by Renegade Kid, and it's coming out. It's being lot checked for Wii U right now, and Jules Watchem. I hope I said his name right, his goal is to make people who bought the 3DS version get the Wii U version for free, like it's a cross-buy game.
Yeah.
But he's running into problems making that work. I assume it's because for cross-buy games or DLC, when you buy one version of the game, you get a big long code on your purchase receipt.
Yeah,
your digital purchase receipt. And since the Wii U version did not exist when the 3DS version came out...
Nobody has the code.
There's no code. So I assume that's what's holding it up. If it is, that's a huge issue. You know, and it's got to be solved for the NX, and I can't believe that it's a problem now.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel bad for the guy because he feels really bad about it. He should not. It's not his problem.
I mean, Nintendo done it themselves with the Mario mini game not long ago. Mario mini game. You know the what is it?
Oh, the counting stars or whatever.
Oh yeah,
tipping stars.
Yeah, tipping stars. Yeah, they did basically the same thing. So it shouldn't. I know it's sort of convoluted way of doing it, but it shouldn't be an issue for a third party to do the same thing.
No.
We hope.
Well, I think Tipping Stars, didn't both versions come out at the same time?
Yeah, and if you bought one, you got it for free, right? So
right, but you got a code because they were out at the same time, so you bought it on Wii U, you got a code for 3DS. What I'm saying is happening with...
Retroactively
being
able to like get a code for something you've already bought somehow.
Right, well, so Nintendo would somehow have to know... via some account system already bought the 3DS version.
They can see that already, though. They can see who's bought the game. They could just generate codes for the Wii U version or whatever.
Well, yeah, I would think that would be possible, but maybe it's not a system they have in place. Yeah. I don't know. It's stupid, whatever it is. But
they don't feel.
But
like
that's
it.
That's another huge issue that's going to have to be solved on the NX, especially I think with Virtual Console stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming Virtual Console survives.
Well, it doesn't really exist at the moment. Didn't they drop the brand for Virtual Console? They just put out the games on the eShop as Super Nintendo games, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, like, I'm kind of hoping that the reason they've been so standoff with old game releases on the Wii U is because they're just like, let's just put all our effort onto the NX versions when we get to that.
Maybe.
You know, like, if no one's making money on it, it's not looking too good.
I mean, that's kind of Nintendo's attitude with every console 3 years in. Well, the next one's going to be coming out, so let's put all our attention on that. Sorry to end on a down note, guys.
Just make me think about the whole life of the Wii U, thanks.
All 5 years of it.
Yeah.
5 years? Has it been 5 years? When did it come out?
No, it's been 2012. It's been like almost three, like not
That's
even
depressing.
Three.
That's sad.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, let's finish the show.
Yay.
You guys want to hear a crappy joke to lighten the mood?
Sure, God.
What is the TMNT's, what is the, I'll rephrase it. What do the Ninja Turtles get at Peeta Pit?
I don't even. Oh what? God, I'm afraid to say.
A ninja rap.
Oh dear.
That was a bad joke.
Yes.
I don't know if that was ending on a better note.
you delivered on that premise, Zach.
I did.
Yeah.
Tune in next week for jokes with Zach.
we'll promise so they'll be just as bad.
As we finish off the show here, I just wanted to quickly say that. We are moving towards doing a live show for Connectivity to fulfill Child's Play stretch goal, right? Reward, whatever it was.
What's the name of that segment, Zach?
I think it's called To Catch a Prehistoric Predator, Carl.
Damn right it is.
And along with that, we're going to be doing a live chat retro with that. So we're probably going to be playing Star Fox Adventures in Dinosaur Planet to tie in with the dinosaur theme. So if you're interested, maybe start chipping away at that game, because hopefully within the next month or so, we will have that live show underway and out. So.
Carl, I could hear your enthusiasm waning from here.
Oh, I'm counting my Bathmodads, dude. Can't wait to start pledging.
Hey, that wasn't really a collectathon, but anyway. So yeah, we haven't got any concrete details. I just wanted to put it out there to say we haven't forgotten about it. We're working towards doing it soon. So look forward to that. And thank you guys for joining me on this episode of Connectivity.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm sorry I was late.
Glad to be here. That's right.
It's okay. You made up for it.
Yeah.
Bad joke, man.
There you go.
And thanks, Carl, for joining us, even though you're not sort of like really super involved in NWR these days.
But not even remotely, no.
It was fun to pull you back in.
No, I mean, I gotta hit all of the podcasts just to sort of complete my set, so... Thank you for helping.
You can have like your award statue, all of the podcasts.
Exactly.
Do you have an Iron Man, Carl?
I totally do. Now I've completed the Iron Man. Although I guess I still have to do I have to fly to Japan, do the FamiCast.
Oh, that's right. It's harder now.
Yeah. Are there any other ones I need to fulfill?
We can play start a new one.
When was the last time you were on? When was the last time you were on Radio Trivia?
Probably like 4 years ago.
All right, you got to refresh that.
I got to refresh that. Has that expired? Yep. I do an annual RFN appearance. That's pretty much my only. That's the only one consistently now. Yeah.
All right, we'll end it there. So thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Later,
everybody.
Bye.
We're still after some more listener mail, so if you have a question, please send it into connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Thanks for listening.